Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Outer Experiences, Inner Miracles with Nancy Pentella, founder of InnerMiracles.com. Outer Experiences, Inner Miracles empowers you to connect to your inner guru so you may create a miraculous life. It's time to become whole in mind, body, heart, and soul. Together, let's create a tsunami of miracles. And here's your host.
Welcome, everyone, to Outer Experiences, Inner Miracles. And we are about to kick off our series in how to thrive in the face of grief. Today, we have Dr. Partsy, who is a world-renowned cardiac anesthesiologist, and he was chief of anesthesiology at Bakersfield Heart Hospital for more than a decade before having his life-changing near-death experience, also known as NDE. Dr. Partsy's study in complementary and alternative medicine has led him to formulate an integrative approach to total wellness. He tours the U.S. extensively, holding workshops to demonstrate methods of healing to help others overcome addiction, depression, and chronic pain. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Partsy, as I welcome you to our show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to have you. I know you're very busy right now. You're touring all over the place since you've launched your beautiful book, Dying to Wake Up.
Thank you.
I love your book. Yeah, thank you so much for your amazing gift and sharing that with us today. And so I want to start with how you've practiced medicine for 25 years, and you were the acting chief of anesthesiology in Southern California at a heart hospital when a serious health issue led to your having a life-altering near-death experience. I want to talk about how your life was. What was your driving motivation when you were a physician before your NDE?
Yeah, you know, my life before NDE was a pursuit of American dream. But, you know, I came to America in 1982 when I was, I think, 23, 24. And success, especially material success, became my main motive. So much so that I first did a residency in pediatrics, and I practiced pediatrics for 2-3 years, but I was not making enough money because pediatrics is the lowest paying specialty. Then I went back and did a residency in anesthesiology, which is one of the highest paying specialties.
Yes.
So, you know, material success and compared to my friends, how big a house I live, what car I drive, and all those things, you know, trappings of materialism was my main motive.
Yes. Yes, and sadly that is the main motive for a lot of people these days. So your book teaches a lot about how to get past that and live a really meaningful life, which I love. I love the lessons in your book. But I know in 2008 you were...
Some higher purpose, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And you can guide people to that higher purpose, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
You have a whole new mission now in life.
And you know, for the higher purpose, Nancy, one doesn't have to believe in God. It could be anything like preventing child abuse or, you know, preventing abuse of the natural resources or environment, something higher than your own self.
Yes. Yeah, and people will be so much happier when they're reaching to achieve something like that in their life instead of materialism. In 2008, you were diagnosed with prostate cancer, and you underwent surgery to remove the tumor. And although the surgery resulted in the successful removal of the cancer, it also produced several complications that ultimately led to 5 more surgeries and debilitating pain. Wow. Did you become addicted to pain pills at that time? Yes. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, you know, originally I had, you know, where the surgery, the anastomosis, where the main urine tube, urethra was cut and sutured back to take the whole prostate out, that would scar up again and again. So I had these 5 surgeries, laser or cold knife, and that developed scarring, led to chronic pelvic pain. And they prescribed the same medications I used to prescribe. I also had a pain management clinic, and the same medications I used to prescribe, they started prescribing to me to manage pain. And, you know, these medicines are very highly addictive. You know, it's a bigger problem in the U.S. right now more than illegal drugs. I was surprised.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either until now, like just recently. I can't believe it's everywhere. It's a huge issue everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Christmas Day in 2010, you were brought to the emergency room. What happened then?
You know, actually, just before this last surgery around Christmas, I think it was later part of first week or second week, I had one of the complications from my original surgery for prostate cancer,
okay.
A radical prostatectomy had led me to incontinence. I had to wear diapers. And since it did not improve for 2.5 years, the doctor at UCLA did a surgery and implanted an artificial sphincter, artificial urethral sphincter. And after that, post-op, I started developing fever, redness, swelling. So my infection was getting deeper and deeper. So around Christmas Day, after having tried oral and IV antibiotics, they decided to do an emergency surgery to take the device out because it had become a source of infection. After all, it is a foreign body.
Wow. You went through a lot. Because you even...
I know.
Well, you went into emergency surgery. And,
yeah, and
something special happened, though, during that surgery, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to describe your situation, like if you were cognizant and what you remember you were thinking?
And I'm very, very thankful to the way things played out. You know, like that's one thing I've learned in life is to be having attitude of acceptance and going with the flow. So on that, during the emergency surgery, I had seen the clock while going in the operating room. And about 20 minutes later, I found myself, you know, floating above my body near the ceiling, and I could see me being cut. I could hear everything. I could smell everything. I even remembered a joke told by an anesthesiologist, but I can't repeat. It was not a clean joke.
I remember reading that.
and I remember me being an anesthesiologist myself. Part of our job is to keep the atmosphere light in the operating room. So we do tell jokes. We know jokes. And then my first reaction was, what's happening? And I was wondering if there was some error in the mixture of the drugs the anesthesiologists give, because there is an anesthetic known as ketamine. And ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic. And it is primarily used in veterinary medicine or in children for burns dressing changes. And I checked my records later. It was not used in my case. So that was my first reaction as a man of things.
Yes. Because you did have patients that did experience that. I remember reading that you had them telling you this before your NDE. And you always kind of just brushed it off thinking it was anesthetic, right? But then you have your own experience, so now you know from your own experience that this was authentic for them probably as well.
Yeah, because, you know, I had a patient about a few years back before my own surgery, which I describe in the book, The Frozen Man. And we were doing a special kind of surgery on him where we could not put him on bypass pump for that part. And we literally froze him, you know. There was no blood going to the brain, no blood going to the heart. It is not a hypothermic cardiac arrest. And when we warmed him up, he became alive again. And then he was describing me operating room and everything. I thought, oh, he doesn't have blood going through his brain for 45 minutes. Maybe he was hallucinating. And I actually gave him an antipsychotic shot.
Haldol. But you didn't know at that time, so now, my goodness, but you had left your medical practice, so, but now you're doing so many amazing things to help people to heal, so it's amazing what you can teach people, and what you can even teach the other doctors, you know, with you having this experience, they'll realize that their patients are actually having this type of experience, you know, the chances are very high.
Yeah, spiritual experience, not just NDE, but transformative spiritual experiences are real.
Yes.
You know, encounter with angels, with the higher guide.
Beautiful.
They are real.
And by talking about this, I want to have you as part of this because this whole discussion is teaching people that there is more life after death. Like there is life after death and there are people, there are beings around us while we are alive. We're never alone. So we can actually call in these beings for help, right? Like, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
Where
you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah, that is a part of my seven eternal truths, which is the final conclusion I had of my ND experience. And one of the truths is that there are higher beings like angels, ascended master, or inner guides who are there to help us. Like in my NDE, I had encountered, though I'm a Hindu, I had encountered with two angels, Michael and Raphael. And so much so when I told my wife about it, she said, what happened to the thousands of Hindu gods and goddesses? None of them came to help there. I honestly
But you still
work
with
like what I'm saying is these angels and guides cut across superficial, artificial, dogmatic, religious lines. Like I call on Raphael so often, and right now for healing, and actually I call on two things, two guides, you know, Raphael, because I'm primarily a healer, and the medicine Buddha. So medicine Buddha and Raphael are my main two energies for healing. And for my communication, I'm a big fan of Angel Gabriel. You know, I never in my wildest dream thought of being on phone with you or writing a book which becomes a bestseller. You know, it was not in my dream.
So beautiful how things pan out. Life is full of miracles. That is beautiful. So during your near-death experience, you left the operating room. And where did you go? Do you want to describe that to everybody?
Yeah, you know, I went to different realms. And, you know, in the other realms, actually, there is no time and space, you know, no time as such. But to describe it, I have to go linear, with linear time. And first I went to India where I saw my mother. And the most scary part of my experience was after that I went to hellish realm. You know, it was so frightening. I can still remember the thunderstorm, the fire, and the different souls crying, wailing. And I asked for help. Why am I here? And showed repentance. And I was given the understanding because so far I had led a very selfish life. Just thinking of me, I was a very good doctor technically. You know, anesthesia is a technical specialty. But I didn't have the empathy, that connection with my patients. You know, they were kind of profit centers. And then when I was asking for help, who shows up is my father who had died 30 years ago. And he looked much younger, but I had a very complex relationship with him. You know, he never showed outside love. You know, he had, in modern terms, PTSD because he was born he was born as a product of partition of India when there was genocide on both sides. Hindu versus Muslims.
So no wonder he had so much built up in him.
He was 18 years old. You know, he had to hide among dead bodies to come to India from Pakistan, which was a Muslim country.
Oh, that's so sad. How traumatizing.
But, you know, then I realized
him,
that he did love me. That,
of course.
And then I also realized that he had been abused by his father physically. So it was and same thing was starting to show up in me, especially towards my elder son. Not, I was not physically abusive, but verbally, I became like my father, you know.
Yeah, it's just
like
so subconscious, right? Yeah, you become a product of your environment. You don't even realize it.
Yeah, and I pushed him into go to medical school, which he flunked, spent 5-6 years there. You know, I would have been very mad if I didn't have a near-death experience, because it wasted about $300,000 in tuition fees and boarding and lodging. But now he's doing computers in San Francisco. He's happy. I just had dinner with him yesterday. I'm in Bay Area right now. It was very nice,
great.
Greek restaurant, yeah. So we are bonding, and as I said, you know, my NDE helped heal the generations backwards, too.
It's so beautiful,
that's
amazing.
Realms. And so my father led me like a little boy towards the tunnel. And in the tunnel, I had review of my present life in the sense that I could feel what the other person was feeling, good or bad. But the most amazing part was, but the most amazing part was review of my past lives, two past lives.
Oh, so you had two of them that you reviewed,
Yeah, and one of the past lives, I was a medieval prince, and I was very nasty and cruel. I can still see the poor farmers in brown, tattered clothes, and I was whipping them, and I had my soldiers whip them too. And I asked for forgiveness from them, and they forgave me. And in real life, now, in my present real life, I used to have pain in my right wrist. I had three surgeries from a torn ligament, and I had developed chronic pain, so much so at times I was not able to work for 3 months or 6 months at a time. And after they forgave me, my pain went away in this life.
And it's amazing.
So now you wonder,
amazing.
Yeah. And now you wonder, how can one go back and ask for forgiveness? But there is no linear time there. Yeah, anything is possible.
Wow.
And I discussed this with Dr. Moody also. So one of part of my message, I'm big on forgiveness. And forgiveness is for our sake, not for other people's sake.
Exactly.
And it's never
it
too late to forgive.
What happened, but exactly.
You know, like that person may
free.
Have passed away. You know, like that person may have passed away, but you can still forgive them.
Yes.
They'll have more
absolutely.
Peace in the other realm.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big believer in forgiveness, too. If you're growing through your life with all this resentment and anger, it can make you sick as well, right?
Oh, very sick,
It can lead to a diagnosis, So it's so important. That's one of the most important things you can learn.
And the main thing is you're forgiving not for that person. And you're not forgiving or condoning his or her action. You're not making the wrong thing as right. But you're doing it for your sake, leaving the charge and emotional attachment to it behind.
Yes, and you'll be happier and more peaceful thanks to that. Sometimes it's a process
for people,
it's a
process.
It can happen
quickly. It's not just a one-time thing, you know. You have to go through, repeat it a few times.
Yes.
And the earlier the incident was in your life, the more, because the earlier developmental incidents are stored deep in the brain at the primordial level, at the brainstem, amygdala, and limbic system. You know, and the incidents later in life are more stored in the prefrontal cortex, PFC. So the more earlier the trauma was, more time it takes to heal.
Yes, I believe that. Absolutely. Now, the angels, going back to them, Raphael and Michael, What was the being of light like? Like you, the angels took you to the being of light, right? What did it feel like? What were your senses like in the presence of this being?
You know, the being of light was like 1,000 suns shining at the same time, but it was not injurious. And I felt supreme. Only earthly words I can use is love and peace, intelligence. That's why I use the word Shanti, Sanskrit word for cosmic peace. I felt I was a part of the being, but separate from the being too. the closest analogy I can give is like waves in the ocean. You know, I was a part of the ocean, but also separate from it. And
beautiful.
I was shown my future life of what I'm doing right now, speaking and writing. And I was told that I will be giving up hardcore materialism and leading a different life. And that's what's coming to pass.
It's beautiful. And it's been 3 years, right? Since you've had this.
No, it happened in December 2010.
2010. Yeah. But the process, like, do you find that, was it the last few years that you find that you've stepped into your truth even more with the healings and stuff, or did it happen right away for you?
You know, I was, it happened gradually.
Yes. Okay.
You know, like I did courses in Ayurveda, which is the ancient way of healing, from Chopra, you know, Deepak Chopra University, then trauma healing, and then yoga, and all those things, you know. And main thing is, it came from inside me, and like, my healing comes from the healing of Angel Raphael, or the medicine, or the healing Buddha.
It's beautiful that you work with them.
So, yeah.
How did you come back into your body after this NDE? How was that experience?
You know, I don't know how other people describe, but for me, I woke up in the recovery room with a jolt, you know, like electric jolt. And the first person I saw was a recovery room nurse who was hooking me up to the monitors. And what I really felt was a lot of gratitude. I wanted to go down on my knees and thank heavens for this experience. But obviously, I have dressings in my belly, and I could not go down. Is it, you know? But that was the thing which I experienced first.
Wow. And did you tell anyone about your experience right when you woke up?
I told the nurse. You know,
yeah,
like I had an out-of-body spiritual experience. And the nurse was very sympathetic, and she said she had heard similar stories from other patients also. And later on, I felt, and talking to other colleagues, that nurses are, you know, especially female nurses, are more spiritually inclined and more nurturing towards people. But doctors are more skeptical, especially the male doctors, which I'm part of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
like
what
in my own family right
school?
Now. Excuse me?
Like in medical school, do you really talk about spiritual matters?
Not at all. The primary thing we talk about, now it is growing, the spiritual is a big, affects the life a lot. And, you know, there are books by Larry Dorsey, Deepak Chopra, and other things. It's just not body and mind. It is mind, body, heart, and spirit. And
absolutely.
These effects can be measured nowadays by modern science.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's becoming much more acceptable, I guess, which is going to help people in every way, because when you're treated as a whole being, that's when miracles actually can happen. You know,
yeah,
not just
exactly.
parts of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
that's wonderful.
I mean, the whole being, you know, like I was talking about male versus female, you know, and like in my own family, my I have a wife. I have one wife, one daughter,
<You're so
laughs> and two sons.
Okay.
Yeah, so my wife and daughter are very sympathetic, and they have been with me and believe it totally. My two sons, you know, 29 and 23, one is in, now the eldest son, after he dropped from medical school, is in computers, and the youngest is in chemical engineering. They are kind of agnostic. You know, they like the new dad, but they don't believe it, or they do not oppose it either.
Okay. They will in time.
They
will probably. Did they read your book? Has your family read
your book? Yeah, they did. They did, but, you know, not with the, like what my wife and my daughter did, you know.
Yeah. Well,
you know, like, that's actually obvious, you know, when I go to any of the spiritual workshops or I give myself, 70 to 80% of the people attending are women.
Oh, yes. That's true. Yeah, you see that a lot at those types of seminars, it's true.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the changes that you actually decided to make after this experience. Like, you gave up your mansion and your Hummer. You did a lot of different things. You talk about that. But how did your colleagues react when you told them that you were quitting medicine?
They thought I've gone crazy. You know, I was the chief, you know, and I had anesthesia was a very lucrative job, you know, like New York Transplant Center article is the fourth best paying job in U.S. But, you know, I had done it for 28 years or so, and then it was my calling at one time, and mainly for financial reasons, but I did not feel connected to it anymore. And I had the blessings of my wife who supported me, and her words, exact words, I don't know whether I write this in the book or not, but she calls me Raja, which means my prince, and she says, Raja, you go out and follow your dream, your dharma, and you have supported and taken care of the family so far. I can help now. She's a dentist, so she supported me.
Oh, perfect. That's great. That's beautiful. That's what marriage is all about, really, is supporting one another. So it's wonderful that you have that support. And she's probably so happy with the changes that have occurred because of this, right? So you're living a more deeply centered life. You're more heart connected, and that's probably affected your marriage in such a positive way as well.
You know, as I talk in the book, was a semi-arranged marriage, but now we have a very deep spiritual connection. But we still, like any other couple, you know, fight. You know, we all have.
Oh yeah,
those
that's normal.
You know, I honestly think if a couple does not fight, means they don't love each other because they don't care whatever the other person does or says.
Yeah, someone's not speaking their truth. There's never any discussions. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
No one's a carbon copy of someone else. Exactly. You're going to have issues to deal with for sure. And that's healthy. It's definitely healthy. Yeah. And I like how you refer to the disease of materialism. You know, if you want to explain that, because our society, our culture is totally messed up with that. You know, people are so hung up on the material aspects of life, and they're not connecting more deeply within themselves, and then they wonder why there's so much depression and anxiety in our world. That's the biggest reason is the material crap, right? It's just, it doesn't make you happy.
Yeah, you know, the main thing is, like, modern society measures success by the numbers in your bank account.
Yes.
And that's what is being promoted on the TV and everything. You know, fancy cars, beautiful girls, or, you know, or macho men smoking, you know, or driving a car. You know, I still remember that Marlboro guy's advertisement, you know, on a cowboy horse. But, you know, one should not go from one extreme to another, you know, because one does need these things. One has to pay the bills. Live it.
Yes.
Like giving an example, I used to have a sports BMW and a Lexus when my ND happened between me and my wife. And now I drive a Toyota Camry, a hybrid, you know, and that hybrid car is, my Toyota Camry is, to me, drives very well, and it's secure, and it is very comfortable. So I'm happy. See, the main difference now is now Rajiv of now wants a reliable, comfortable car, but he does not care what other people in the world think that he's driving a Camry instead of a expensive car.
Well, that's a good thing, because so many people are hung up on that. People are wearing masks all the time, and they just need to be true to themselves and stop caring about what anyone thinks and be true to themselves. But the material aspect
be true for your
crazy.
Own self. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And you refer to how your spiritual enlightenment, this whole path, how it's been a lonely one. And why do you feel that it's been lonely?
You know, because there are very few people pursuing this path, and so, you know, like, to be a part of a community is very important. You know, like, I've been studying Buddhism, and they talk mm-hmm. about three noble truths. One is Buddha, you know, or you can talk about Christ or any Christ consciousness. Second thing is Dharma, following your purpose and following the norms of the society and religion. And the mm-hmm. third, equally important, is Sangha, which means like hanging around with like-minded people.
Yes.
So Christ, Bible, and the congregation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is so important to actually, you know, be around people that are like-minded, that support you and you support them. Because, yeah, I think everyone needs to learn that, too, of setting boundaries. You know, if people aren't supporting you to your higher purpose and they're actually discouraging you, you have to set boundaries with those people and actually, you know, gently and lovingly, compassionately, you know, kind of spend less time with them, but get them out of your life gently, you know, just kind of move forward. But look for people. Actually, it just naturally seems to come to you, right? Did you find that too? When you actually set those boundaries, you made room for the right people to come into your life.
Yeah,
did you feel that way as well?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did, you know, because like one of the things, you know, like my previous social life was centered around going with doctors and having drinks almost every weekend mm-hmm. and talking about money and insurances and all those things. But now I don't fit in that society, you know. But I still go once in a while for my wife's sake because her friends are there. But I go on weekends for meditation retreats, silent meditation retreats.
Beautiful.
That brings me more joy.
And that's fun.
it's fun, to be honest.
That's exciting.
You know, like,
it is.
Yeah. You know, the three things I talk about to transform, you know, like my corporation name is Wake Up Now. It's prayer, service, and meditation.
Beautiful. I love it. You're on such a beautiful path, Dr. Bartzi. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
And I know you've actually come up with a near-death manifesto, which sounds interesting. And I'd like you to share with everybody what that's all about, because they may want to explore this with you.
Yeah, you know, the near-death manifesto is based on my seven truths. Like the first being, you know, that consciousness can exist outside the body.
Mm-hmm.
Second being that there is life after death because I met my father. Then we have past and future lives, which do affect our present life, like my being a cruel medieval prince manifested in this life, or being, you know, very selfish. And one of the lives, I was a poppy farmer in Afghanistan, and that manifested in this life with addiction to pain medicines. And the other thing, as I pointed out before, there are higher beings like angels, ascended masters, Buddha, Christ, who are there to help us, you know, for asking.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are different levels of consciousness. You know, you can classify it as awake, dream, sleep, and transcendental, cosmic, divine, and finally universal. Or one can even classify them according to the Sanskrit word chakra. You know, you know, it goes from the lowest chakra, which is gross earth, all the way up to the crown chakra, which is pure consciousness. And the main thing is that we are all connected to each other because we are made of the same thing. So by serving another person, I'm serving myself.
Exactly.
And ultimate manifesto truth is that the core reality is pure, unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest one can describe the core, basic, primordial reality.
Yes. How beautiful is that? And how simple is that, really?
Yeah.
You know, we complicate everything. We just focus
so
on
true.
That, our world would shift dramatically.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's what life's about. I love
it. You know, to do your best you can. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To have that compassion.
Actually,
for
you know, I went to one workshop and recently it was with my friend Rick Hansen, and he talked about, and I love that quote, a 12-year boy in South Africa, Nikosi, who was born with AIDS. You know, his mother was a street pursue, and he was born with AIDS, and he died when he was 12. And his words, profound words he said before he died, 12, we all should do what we can, where we are, with what we have been given.
Yes. I love that. And it's true. Everyone has a gift to share, but they don't always connect with that. Yeah. So important, you know.
So, you know, do what you can, where you are, with what you have been given.
Yes. And how do you recommend people connect to know what gift they have been offered, what gift they've been given, you know, what they can actually do in this world? Do you think meditation is the best way to actually do that, to discover it?
You know, meditation is one of the ways, because what I... Prayer is when one talks to the divine, and meditation is when divine talks to you. And because the language of God is silence. So, you know, what you feel called for will come in your, you know, you can try different things, what you dream of, what your hobby is, or you can do an exercise. If you had all the money in life and you didn't have to work for money or for a living, what would you do? Or one can do a similar thing. What would you do, even if you had to pay to do it? By answering these questions, one can... Yeah, like, what are you really passionate about? And as I said, this passion does not have to depend upon belief in God.
No, exactly. Exactly.
And they say if you work your passion, you don't work a single day.
Oh, it's so true, too. Yeah, absolutely. The days just go by so quickly. The hours fly by, and you're in bliss the whole time, you know, as busy as it can be. It's a beautiful feeling because you know you're on purpose. And that changes
everything. Yeah, like, you know, I was recently talking to one of my friends, and she wrote down what... to happen to her, and she says, at the end of my life or end of my day, I want to be tired and feel used up by God.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I've read a quote about that, you know, sliding into the gates of heaven with like champagne in one hand and your body's worn out, but you lived your life, you know, you did it all.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Exactly. That's how it's supposed to be. Perfect.
Yeah.
So during your near-death experience, the angels, and what you describe as the being of light, directed you to return to your physical life and to teach consciousness-based healing. So when you asked them what they meant by that, they told you that you have the knowledge inside of you and that you have to learn it for yourself to fully comprehend it. So how is that journey going? How's that been?
You know, that journey is almost coming to fruition, that I'm developing a new website, a new program for healing.
Nice.
And
beautiful.
Because one of the things is, like, especially I'm going to or concentrate on people who are addicted, not with active addiction, because active addiction one still needs the care of a modern medicine for detox. But, you know, like if I have a heart attack, I'm not going to sit down and just say, oh, I'm going to go to the hospital and get my coronary arteries opened up. But after that, I need to change my lifestyle so it does not reoccur. Because 70% of the cardiac or other diseases in this world are lifestyle diseases. You know, diabetes, you know, heart attacks, high blood pressure, etc. So I'm going to be concentrating on sobriety, and especially with the help of consciousness-based healing, which will include, which does include, you know, the traumas, you know, which trauma to the soul or the psyche, and the trauma, in my view, can happen at four levels. One, it can happen from the past life. It can happen from early childhood and in utero. It can happen in the adult life, or it can happen what is known as family constellations, like grandfather suffered from Holocaust, or in my case, my father suffered from genocide, and me or my son, who has never even met him, suffers from the same symptoms. That's known as family constellations.
Wow.
Because there is no addiction without a trauma. There is some underlying trauma.
Oh, that's a huge field to be working in because there's such a need for that. You know, it's everywhere. It's so globally an issue. So you'll have your work cut out for you, but you'll be creating miracles along the way, which is so beautiful.
it is so satisfying, you know. It's the same kind of satisfaction I used to get when I was doing anesthesiology. You know, I didn't care whether the patient had insurance or not. I did the best I could. And like one of the cases I still remember, one patient was touch and go in the operating room. You know, the heart wouldn't start. It will start, then stop, then start, then stop.
Mm.
And finally, we put him on a pacer, and it started to beat again. And to see that patient next day having breakfast with his family.
That's so incredible.
It's a miracle.
Wow.
And similarly, with consciousness-based medicine, you know, somebody who's addicted to heroin goes through detox and now is leading a very productive life. It's very heart-fulfilling. It's not just intellectual exercise.
Well, I can feel your heart during this interview. Like, you are very much from your heart. And you probably always were. It's just, you know, the ego stepped in a little bit. But it never took away that beautiful experience you put into life itself through your heart. Like, you always had love for humanity, even though your ego was focused on materialism. You had
that love in
you.
For some years, it was covered up,
Yeah, but you have a beautiful heart. I can totally feel the love from you. You were on a mission now, like you always were, but now it's a deeper mission. But you always had that love, for sure, because you are that love. So no matter
and
so what,
so is everybody
it's
else.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, they don't all realize it, but we're all derived from the same source. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what culture we're from or what beliefs we have. We are all from that same beautiful divine source of love. That's what created us. So
the goal in life should be from a Sanskrit word, Pali, which is known as mudita, M-U-D-I-T-A. And that word really signifies love and joy for me and love and joy for you.
Beautiful.
Not just for me, you know, for you also.
May
I be happy, may you be happy. May I be taken care of. May you be taken care of.
That's beautiful. And that's how it should be.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. I love it. So I want to know what you think about this, but do you think the spiritual life revealed in your near-death experience, can it be reached without nearly dying?
Oh, yeah. That's my main message when I speak or workshop.
Nice.
That, like this... You don't have to have a near-death experience to transform. This transformation is available to you right now. And that's the three things I main emphasize. Meditation. There are different kinds of meditations, you know. Meditation, prayer, and service.
Yeah.
Like right now with the meditation, you know, I can almost touch that peace and love. You know, like the, as I said, the consciousness goes up. And like, you know, there was an Indian teacher who came to America who brought the meditation for the first time. You know, you may have heard his name, Transcendental Meditation, Mahesh Yogi. And he never told people to stop smoking or stop drinking. But once you start, but he said, meditate twice a day, which I do. And with meditation, you elevate your level of consciousness. There are things which are not serving you just fall off. And here, I often use the concept by Albert Einstein, who said, you know, I'm paraphrasing that, a solution to a problem cannot be found at the level of consciousness where it was created.
Absolutely. Yes. And it's so simple, and it's so true. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You change your consciousness, you change it all.
You change your consciousness, you change your life, you change your world.
Yeah.
It's living from a higher vibration.
Yes, absolutely. And all these stories with near-death experiences, I know you've been exposed to a lot of them now. There are more and more people that are coming out with the books about it and, you know, sharing their experiences. But what, if anything, do these stories have in common?
You know, one thing they have, I think two things in common. One thing is most of, almost all have a profound effect on the person. It changes mm-hmm. them dramatically, and to me that is one of the proofs that the thing happened, or it is not just a dream
yeah.
or a hallucination. The change
yeah.
that happens in the person. And the second
mm-hmm.
thing is everyone talks about, it's hard to describe, but the feeling of love and peace as ultimate reality.
Mm. Beautiful.
You know, Dr. Eben Alexander, Anita Morjani, and all those people,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yes. Yes. You're
the
a different
main thing
person
is love and love, peace, and the change.
Yes. So, what is a light shout? You talk about how this can spur spontaneous healing when, you know, they occur. What exactly are they?
You know, light shout is kind of based on my near-death experience journey. I call it light being meditation, where
okay.
I take people on, or the people can do it on their own. They go to the realm and meet the light or the ascended masters, and that can
yes.
help with healing. The solution, the healing
yes.
comes from inside, from the soul level, from the light itself.
Beautiful. I love it. Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
I definitely want to book with you one of your workshops because you're just amazing. oh, that's awesome. So have you shared a death experience with a friend when he passed away from cancer. I want you to definitely share that with us before we close up here, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, you know, there is a thing which more and more people are coming out with. Dr. Moody actually had his own self, which is known as shared death experience, where your
yes.
loved one, your friend, like part of your soul or your soul goes with them to certain level
yeah.
or place, and then the other person goes away and there's a boundary or something and you come back to your body.
Yeah,
so like
beautiful.
My
wow.
friend who was dying from metastasis of from colon cancer.
Yes.
I met him, and he, in the evening, he was comatose. You know, he was at home because he wanted to die at home, and he could barely respond. So I came home, and next
mm-hmm.
morning, early morning, I was woken up with a bright light in my room. And the dimensions of the room changed. They became elliptical, and I can see my friend Naresh calling me, you know, waving me and calling
yeah.
me. So part of my consciousness went with him. And
beautiful.
Then I came back, and he kept going.
Wow. That is so beautiful. How powerful is that? Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced that again, like with any of your clients or anything, or like some kind of shared experience, not necessarily NDE,
no.
but something where you're both in the
I
same
have not
kind of consciousness?
Experienced the shared experience,
yet,
but I often, as I said, you know, I have experienced what is, you know, ascending in a Kundalini rising. You know, like these
yeah.
things are possible by deep meditation, you know. And with Kundalini
mm.
rising is basically going from gross to subtler, subtler, and finally going to the top of the head and to the light. And actually, in that
mm.
experience, I went beyond light into total, and it was what is known as emptiness or shunyata, from
mm.
where everything is
wow.
a reason. Nothingness gives
wow.
rise to everything.
It's beautiful. Well, I know
yeah.
I had an experience years ago, and this was before my uncle died. My uncle was like
mm-hmm.
a father to me, and
mm-hmm.
I went to see a medium, and she had me on the table, and she asked me about the colors I was seeing, and she was seeing the same colors that I was seeing, and she's describing them exactly as I was seeing them. So I was like, wow, this is really neat. And then she asked me, we saw the white light, and she said, do you want to go with me into the white light? And I said, yes, of course. So we started going through this tunnel, and all of a sudden, it was this most incredible feeling of bliss, this love. It was like the deepest love I've ever experienced in my life. But I saw all of my loved ones on both sides of me. And these were clients I've worked with, my pets I've had, family members, friends, everyone who's passed away. And that overwhelming feeling of love is just, it's incredible. I just can't even put it into words. I was overwhelmed. Like, I was overwhelmed with joy and tears, and like, it was incredible. I was only there for a short period because of the overwhelm, but it was just so beautiful. And I guess that's probably how you would describe it, right? Like that incredible love. Like there are no words for that.
Exactly. That peace, joy, you know, bliss.
Amazing. Total bliss. And I know this woman, she didn't tell me my uncle was dying, but he died of an unexpected massive heart attack. He was a super health fanatic. He was amazing. You'd never expect him to have a heart attack. But he died a few weeks later, and I swear she brought me there so that I would know where he was going, so that I would have a peace in knowing that he would be surrounded by this bliss and this love. And that's why I'm happy to have you here today, because people that have had losses, you know, the physical losses, they know where their loved ones are going. When they hear your story and what you've experienced, it'll help them to have peace with that. You know, it's just when you know that and you've experienced it, or you know that it's total love and peace, it just, it brings a peace to you in knowing that they're in a better place, and they really are in a better place.
Younger sister, 4 years younger than me, about 4 years ago, lost her 22-year-old son to a car accident in Singapore.
Wow.
And that has helped her, you know, that he is still there and he's peaceful, and to let go so they can have their own peace. You know, what I feel is if you cling to this, their soul then does not have the freedom to. The main thing I was able to help my sister with my experience was of letting go.
Beautiful. So do you have workshops for people that are grieving, or is it just you have your same workshops, but people that are grieving would really benefit from attending your workshops, right?
You know, I've not developed a workshop just for grieving. As I said, I was more concentrating more on sobriety, but that is something for me to look into.
Yeah, it might be a great idea, because there's so much help needed in that field, for sure. So that's why I wanted to do this series.
That's something, you know, for me it is very home, you know, my own nephew.
Exactly. Everyone has losses, so it's a good thing to think about doing, because I know when I lost my dad a year and a half ago, I wanted to do something to help people, because I know I was a daddy's girl, so I was totally... Like, I loved my dad. I still love my dad, of course, and he gives me signs all the time, but I know he's around, and that's why this whole interview can help people to realize that you just change form, right? That's all that happens.
Yeah.
They're not gone forever. Yeah. They just change form. Yeah.
Your soul is never born, never cannot be cut, cannot be dried. It is eternal.
No. It's just amazing. It's beautiful, and you have such a beautiful energy, Dr. Parthi. I'm really grateful that I have this opportunity to share your work with the world and to share your energy with the world.
That's why I wrote this book, you know, Dying to Wake Up, you know.
Yeah. That's your website, dyingtowakeup.com. So
exactly.
If people want to connect with you, they can definitely go to your website. And your book is available on Amazon, iTunes, Audible. I got it at Kohl's, but chapters and... Like, it's pretty much everywhere, right? It's a bestseller.
Yesterday, my friend sent me a note that she went to, you know, she's in charge of irons in Santa Barbara, but she went to Stanford University.
Yes.
And in Stanford University bookstore, my book was there. I was surprised.
It's everywhere. It's just beautiful. Yeah. I love your book. I read sitting. I could not put it down. I just loved it. And I know all of you will love it too when you read it. And if you look at his website, Dying to Wake Up, you can connect with him there and possibly book a workshop, or, you know, get out there and buy his book or download it in iTunes. And, you know, it's one of the best things you can do for yourself. You'll learn a lot from amazing Dr. Parthi. It's beautiful. So,
Thank you.
I'm so grateful to have you here today. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really, really grateful. And I also recommend that you guys follow him on Twitter and Facebook. That's Dr. Rajiv Parthi. And you'll probably find links on the website, I suppose. Dying to Wake Up, I believe there's links on your website. Yeah, so they can follow you there too and look into your workshops. And they'll learn a lot from you. But thank you so much for being here. Everyone, you've been listening to Outer Experiences and Our Miracles. And thank you, Dr. Parthi, for starting us off.
I feel very connected to you. Actually, I'm feeling very connected to you and the audience here.
Oh, thank you. And we're super connected to you. I'm like feeling you in my heart. Just amazing.
Me too.
You're so, wow. You're beautiful, Dr. Parthi. I really, really am grateful to have you here.
Thank you,
everyone. And yes, we'll stay in touch for sure after this. And look him up. You'll be grateful to read his book and connect with him. Thank you so much, Dr. Parthi.
Thank you.
You've been listening to How to Thrive in the Face of Grief. This is going to help all of you who have had losses or of any kind, you know, whether it's been death or, you know, breakup or losing a job, anything at all, you can learn a lot from this beautiful man. And thank you, Dr. Parthi. You have a beautiful, beautiful day.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Outer Experiences, Inner Miracles with your host, Nancy Pentella. To learn more about Inner Miracles, go to innermiracles.com and connect with Nancy to find out how she and her programs can help you today. Join us next time for more strategies and inspiration to become the creator of your miraculous life.